Herzlich willkommen zu Domain It Yourself, dem Podcast rund um die Domain of One's Own und was man mit ihr so machen kann. So war, glaube ich, unser Claim. Oder, Katharina?
Gut, finde ich.
Sehr gut.
Also, wenn's noch nicht unser Claim war, dann sollte es der jetzt werden.
Genau. Mein Name ist Christian Friedrich.
Ich bin Katharina Schulz.
Und wir haben uns zu einer ganz kurzen Aufzeichnung zusammengefunden, denn es gibt im Prinzip zwei Neuigkeiten rund um die Domain of One's Own bzw. unser Projekt und die wollten wir natürlich auch im Podcast kurz erzählen. Soll ich mal einfach mal anfangen?
Ja, gerne.
Neuigkeit 1. Neuigkeit 1 ist, darüber haben wir auch einen schnellen Blogbeitrag geschrieben, dass wir von Michael Eichhorn rund um rund um das Projekt, ist das Projekt oder eine Einrichtung, Studium Digitale an der Goethe-Uni in Frankfurt eingeladen wurden, um einen schnellen Workshop zu geben rund um die Domain of One's Own. Und daraus oder unter anderem daraus hat sich etwas ergeben, nämlich?
Ja, und zwar war Karl-Heinz Pape auch mit in unserem Workshop und der fand die Idee anscheinend so gut oder ich glaube, er kannte sie vorher auch schon, hat das aber dann zum Anlass genommen, eine Community zu gründen, wo eben Domain of One's Own im Corporate-Bereich umgesetzt wird. Oder die Community gab es möglicherweise auch schon vorher. Auf jeden Fall gibt es jetzt viele Leute, die im Corporate-Bereich Domain of One's Own umsetzen. Karl-Heinz Pape kenne ich von Twitter, weil er das Corporate Learning Camp veranstaltet, an dem ich noch nie teilgenommen habe, aber wo ich immer dachte, ja, das ist eine spannende Sache. Also ich verfolge das immer nur so ein bisschen über Twitter. Du kannst da vielleicht mehr zu sagen, weil du schon mal teilgenommen hast.
Ich war einmal dabei, wäre auch gerne öfter dabei gewesen. Das hat aber irgendwie terminlich nie so richtig gepasst. Aber ich glaube, vor 2 Jahren in Hamburg dabei. Ich weiß gar nicht, ob vor 2 oder 3. Das erste Mal, als das an der TU stattfand in Hamburg. Und das ist ja eine recht lebhafte Community von Menschen, die sich so um Corporate Learning Gedanken machen und da auch selbst häufig auch in dem Feld. Da hat sich jetzt tatsächlich aus dieser Community heraus ein Corporate Learning Community gebildet, die unter dem Hashtag bei Twitter zum Beispiel gefunden werden kann. CLCDOOO. Verlinken wir auch in den Shownotes. Aber das wollten wir, glaube ich, hier nur ganz kurz loswerden, einfach weil es ja schön ist, dass es noch mehr Leute gibt, die irgendwie mit der Idee was anfangen können. Und damit ja auch irgendwie die Perspektiven auf das Thema nochmal sehr viel breiter werden. Das wird super.
Ja, also ich fand das auch total cool, dass wirklich ganz spontan und direkt dieser Impuls aufgenommen und umgesetzt wurde und nicht lange gefackelt. Gut, die sind natürlich auch etwas weniger behäbig als eine große Institution wie eine Hochschule. Aber ja, ich freue mich über jeden, der die Idee aufgreift und was damit macht.
So ist es. Wir haben aber noch eine zweite Neuigkeit.
Genau. Und zwar hatten wir eine Session bei der OER. Ich weiß gar nicht, wie man es richtig ausspricht. Also es war die Fusion-Veranstaltung der OER 21 und der Domains Conference. Mhm. Also es hieß OER Cross Domains 21. Möglicherweise. Genau, und wir haben eine Session vorab aufgenommen und die wurde dann während der Konferenz freigeschaltet auf YouTube. Und wir waren währenddessen parallel auf Discord und haben mit den TeilnehmerInnen gechattet.
Genau, so liefen ganz viele Sessions ab. Ich glaube, fast alle in dem Domains-Track. Es gab verschiedene Tracks. Die OER-Konferenz ist ja so ein bisschen eine der großen Stammkonferenzen rund um Open Educational Resources weltweit. Und die Domains-Konferenz ist eine, ich glaube, inzwischen 2-jährig stattfindende Konferenz, die sich wirklich mit Domain of One's Own und Practitioners, Educators rund um Domain of One's Own irgendwie beschäftigt. Und ich glaube unter anderem, weil Pandemie ist, wurde beschlossen, das erstens remote zu machen und das dann auch gleich zusammenzuführen, also letztendlich auch die Benefits, die dann eine Remote-Konferenz bietet, mitzunehmen und die beiden Konferenzen zu mergen. Und wir wurden interviewt oder die Session wurde gehostet von niemand Geringerem als The Reverend himself, Jim Groom.
Der Godfather of Domains.
Genau, der das an der University Mary Washington damals mit unter anderem Martha Burtis losgetreten hat und jetzt eben auch mit Reclaim Hosting eigentlich die Hosting Company für den Education-Bereich letztendlich unterhält und betreibt, die eigentlich erste Ansprechpersonen sein sollten, wenn man Domains fremdhosten möchte, finde ich zumindest. Und in dem Gespräch ging es ja eigentlich um das ganze Spektrum dessen, was wir so im Podcast auch schon besprochen haben, ne?
Genau. Also wir haben so ein bisschen von unserer Perspektive und unseren Erfahrungen berichtet. Und ja, Jim hat eben aber auch sehr viel seine Sicht beigesteuert. Also es war insgesamt ein sehr anregendes Gespräch. Und ja, also war natürlich auch eine große Gelegenheit, bei der Konferenz dabei zu sein und dann ausgerechnet mit ihm über das Thema zu sprechen.
Ich glaube, wir haben es relativ eigennützig auch so gehandhabt, ihn so halb zu interviewen und ihn halb irgendwie auch mit in die Session zu integrieren. Deswegen würde ich fast sagen, wir
versuchen gar nicht, das zusammenzufassen, sondern sagen, hört selbst rein. Wir haben das Ganze als Podcast vorbereitet, also die Audioaufnahme könnt ihr euch anhören. Und ihr findet aber auch den Link zur Videoaufnahme in den Shownotes.
So ist es, genau. Und auch ein paar andere Links noch zur Konferenz und so weiter packen wir natürlich rein. Aber jetzt von uns beiden schon tschüss. Gleich werden uns die Zuhörenden in diesem Podcast ungewohnterweise in englischer Sprache sprechen hören. Und dann sind wir in Conversation mit Jim Groom. Viel Spaß dabei.
Genau, viel Spaß. Und wir haben uns sehr viel Mühe gegeben mit unserem Englisch.
Das stimmt. Ob es gereicht hat, mögen die Zuhörenden beurteilen.
Genau.
Bis dann.
Okay, bis dann.
Welcome to this Domains 21 session. I am joined today by Katharina Schultz and Christian Friedrich, and they'll be here today talking to us about outside their domain, introducing German higher ed to domain of one's own, which is near and dear to my heart. So please, Katharina and Christian, take it away.
Thanks, Jim. We're very happy to be here and talk about our project. And yeah, it's a special occasion for us.
Yeah, thanks very much. So what we have planned for today, for this session, is we'll kick things off with a short presentation, a couple of slides that Katharina will present, and then hope to dive into a more conversational part, especially with you, Jim, but of course, also with everyone participating and viewing this session. So let me just see if this works now. You should be able to see my screen now, right?
Yeah, thank you.
Nice.
Yeah. So first off, we have a short presentation about our project. It's just simply called Domain of One's Own because actually the concept is not very well known in Germany, and that's one of the main goals of our project, to make it better known in Germany. And our project is funded by the University of Applied Sciences Hamburg, HAW Hamburg, as part of a cooperation of all or most Hamburg universities called the Hamburg Open Online University. It all started at an event called OER Camp Meets Hacks and Tools. The OER Camps was a series of bar camps funded by the German Ministry of Education and Science. And the Hacks and Tools was sort of a workshop where people could bring their OER projects and work with coaches, and there was also the opportunity to win funding. And Christian and I were there. It was almost exactly a year ago, and we had talked about doing something on Domain of One's Own before, and we spontaneously decided to pitch for funding. And this is us during the pitch. And yeah, so we were a bit surprised because it was all spontaneous, and we actually won a little bit of funding by Hamburg Open Online University. The project has sort of the main task, or one of the main aims is, as I said, making domain of one's own better known in Germany, but also is when you translate something into German or any other language, you also have to suit it to the country, and not only translate it, but also look at the differences and what the culture needs. And so we're sort of trying to adapt domain of one's own for Germany. So it started off with a white paper by EduCourse, 7 Things You Need to Know About Domain of One's Own. And we're trying to adapt this for the German culture, for the German higher ed landscape. Yeah, the main goal is to tell people how to do it. So what is it? Because, as I said, it's not very well known. So we want to provide material about what the concept entails, but also what they should know if they want to try to implement it at their own university. And so we're looking at the concept from different perspectives, pedagogy, didactics, but also cultural circumstances, organizational aspects, but also the student's perspective is very important for us. We started out by taking a look at the concept through a series of conversations, which we recorded in a podcast, and we had different guests from different fields. We had someone who is an expert on open education and works in is a professor in the field, but we also we talked with the students, and we also talked with people who are more in the strategic sector in German higher ed. Apart from the podcast, we are also going to develop white papers and sort of guides or how-tos so you have a guideline if you want to implement the concept in your teaching. What we'd like to talk about now is the challenges that we face, but also brought a couple of questions that we could would like to discuss with people who have experience with the concept. And some of the challenges we face is that Germany is a largely conservative, or it has very conservative traditions, the German higher ed landscape. But it's also largely publicly funded, which means it's traditionally underfunded. And it also has a culture that is not very open to change. And yes, so we brought a couple of questions that we could discuss. And we would also like to hear from you about your experiences and also your success stories. So we're hoping there those are out there.
But one of the things I wanted to ask as we start this, and I'm pretty interested in, is over the last 5 or 6 years, since about 2016, when a German contingent came to OER, and I was actually at that conference, there seemed to be a moment in the German higher ed landscape where it's like, OER is something we need to pursue. And I wonder, like, how has that developed? And do you see overlap in the work you're doing with the larger push and funding of open educational resources? So I'll start there, and then we can address those questions as we move.
Part of the reason why, and I was at that conference in 2016 in Edinburgh, part of the reason, I think, why at least more and more take up among the German communities in around open education was, especially to the OER conference, I think were two things. And on the one hand, there was some funding available with OER Info. I think Jöran Musmeholz has talked a bit about that. And the OER camp, for example, where we pitched this idea and then developed this idea of trying to convert ideas of domain of one's own to the German landscape. That's basically the OER camp. So this kind of unconference is financed or was financed by OER Info in large parts, at least, together with the Hamburg University of Applied Sciences. And that kind of enabled a more systematic take-up of OER and open education principles in the German landscape. In 2016, there was also the most recent coalition in the German government. You all know Angela Merkel, probably. And in the coalition papers, it was stated that Germany would try and develop an OER strategy. That hasn't really happened yet. Now, in the last 6 or 7, 8 months of this this government being in charge, it seems almost like a fig leaf approach to develop a OER strategy now, at least from what I can tell. But of course, that they are starting that, and they are starting with conversations around that, and they're. I think a week before this airs, we should have more input on how the consultations with different stakeholders went. I think they're scheduled for mid-April, which is also a first. So the Ministry of Education doesn't usually consult stakeholders in this kind of official manner when developing strategies. So OER is playing a role, but OER Info, the project that I just mentioned, that is kind of supposed to network different actors, was not continued and ended by, I think, fall in 2020.
I see some similarities. I work in the field of open access, so support for research publications, and that's something that has also there have been strategies by the government and by federal states. And then recently I read that the Green Party, they have in their for the coming elections, so one of their claims is that open access should become the standard for research publications. And that's exactly the same sentence that has been in strategies for 10 years or 15 years. Mm-hmm. And so I've the same thing seems to be happening with OER strategy. So it's not really much happening. There's strategies, but we don't really see a lot of structural change.
So one of the things I'm interested in is, I mean, it sounds to me when you frame the broader public funded fairly conservative, because that is public funds and, you know, the risks you take have a lot of implications more broadly to the nation. So I'm wondering, how do you see domain of one's own within the context of German higher education? A lot of folks who will be talking about it and chatting about it and you'll hear about may use it as a form of a portfolio, an experimental place to kind of narrate your learning over time, places for faculty to share their research. I mean, but in the end, we're talking about a website that you and maybe a community control and build. And it's not limited to one technology, but hopefully gives you access to several. So in the context of the German higher ed landscape, how would that, or how are you positioning that as something where folks would be enticed?
Or from my experience, you have to be a sort of a bit, you have to make sure that you don't come across as someone who wants to change everything, because then people only think of the challenges and all the reasons why it wouldn't work. So when you try to explain the idea, most people say, oh, so it's like an e-portfolio, because that's something that German universities have been doing, not all of them, but it's sort of, they know about it. And they can relate to domains from that viewpoint. And from my experience, I think it's best to try to start small and not try to change the whole landscape of a university.
That's right. If you come across as the flag carrying revolutionary trying to conquer a campus or an IT center on a campus, you'll be shut out. But on the other hand, I think that the very, very, very many things of domain of one's own kind of are a great fit to the overall culture and strategy of public universities being publicly funded. And I can hear like Robin DeRosa sigh in the back a bit of about your higher ed sector is mostly publicly funded. And that given that domains enables you to claim your space on the public web for everybody to be able to access it if you allow them to, if you enable that, whatever kind of technology you use. I think that's, for example, a great fit and can easily be tagged to different kind of strategic viewpoints that universities and higher ed actors sometimes have. On the other hand, what we ran into quite a lot by now is like this, we've been there before, we've done that before kind of feedback. So many of you, and I know you, Jim, you might remember this as well. I'm pretty sure you do, because I think I stumbled upon a couple of screenshots of a couple of like personal HTML designed websites that faculty and staff at a university had in the 90s. And I think I'm not sure, maybe somebody will be able to dig it up, or I might be able to find it. I think I even saw that in a blog post by you, Jim, a couple of years ago, where you kind of highlighted those HTML-based websites that could look kind of freaky.
Several of them were German, actually.
And several of them were German. We just ran a workshop with the university in Mainz in Germany. And
Frankfurt.
There was one. The workshop was based in Frankfurt. But there was one guy from the university in Mainz, or who was based at the university in Mainz at their IT department. And he was like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. We basically shut down what you're talking about in 2018. So up until that point, they had those sites up and running, and not many people were able to claim that because it was kind of technologically not as accessible. If you this kind of disconnect And I think to some extent it even ignores that there's pedagogy, there's organizational development involved, there's all these things that might have been ignored when this was run in the 90s.
Basically. Yeah, I think that's the problem. From what that guy told us, it wasn't... They just gave them the space, the web space, and there was no support. There was no... There might have been technical support, but nobody helped them and gave them ideas what they could do with it. It wasn't embedded in the pedagogy, the teaching and learning. So, of course, it doesn't work.
The idea of the 90s web, there's a Russian net artist, Olya Lyalina, who I'm really interested in. And she just wrote a piece from my to me, talking about the changing nature of the web from a kind of my site, my space, my, you know, GeoCities to me. Look at me, here I am, and how the me is always on another platform that you don't own. And I think that point you're making about these faculty who actually were doing open education, were sharing their courses, were building out resources for students, were running entire courses online in the 90s using HTML, we're really alighting in kind of, in some ways, not only alighting, but full-blown bulldozing a whole infrastructure of the web and open educational resources in place of these platforms, in place of these vendor solutions, in place of you name it. And the point you're making, which is really interesting, because I was on a call recently where there was a school who was arguing we need to get rid of, you know, hundreds of HTML sites on an Apache server because, like, they're no longer sustainable. And I have this voice in my head from Olia Lialina's recent, you know, article where I'm like, that's a mistake. Like, I don't know if this makes sense to start thinking of the web as a kind of a necessary singular progress where the idea of building and creating a sense and a presence that you have and that can be consistent and maybe not the brand that the university is going for is important. And I think in some ways that space of a domain of one's own, whether it's through Reclaim or wherever, is important because a lot of those faculty have become disempowered with the work that they did for many of them several decades. So it's a really interesting question around how much power do we cede, not only to the big platforms, right, but also even to central IT of the work we've done over time. And I think that really puts domains to me in a very interesting place because historically, the need for it is there.
But I think that might be one of the big obstacles in Germany, actually, central IT and central communication departments who don't really want to give not only students, but also faculty, they don't want to give them their own domains. That's the first thing you hear at several universities. Why should we, central communication allow students to have their own domain when even we, the faculty, aren't allowed to have it? And you talk to central IT, and when you're building a publication server, like an institutional repository, but they can put on that server, they can put anything they want. Who controls the quality? And so I think that's a big obstacle in Germany.
It's a question there, and it came up recently. I think Gardner Campbell blogged just the other day about this idea of how do we and why do we have the power to cede so much of the cultural history of an institution and the thinking for faculty, for students on these different technologies, whether they're HTML sites from the 90s or say a WordPress site that's no longer wanting to be supported by central IT or whatever. How do we give one group that much power to say no or to say goodbye? And this isn't to vilify central IT because they have a lot of real challenges in this changing ecosystem, right? Like they have hard to keep on to their employees because so much they can make so much money elsewhere. They have to outsource a lot of that to keep up. I mean, there's challenges, at least mm-hmm. if I'm speaking from the U.S. perspective. But at the same time, politically and policy-wise, these decisions are being made unilaterally about a whole history of web-based learning, where I think in this moment during the pandemic, we'd be like, oh, maybe it's important to hold on to a little bit of that long history to understand where we were, where we are, and where we're going. But I find that stuff is just bulldozed, kind of like cities during the 60s as they're getting ready for the next wave of gentrification. It's really crazy.
I have two thoughts on that. And the first one is pretty short. I think the whole job description of the central IT is to be risk averse and not to, and that kind of, that deconstructs lots of innovation quite quickly, actually. I mean, to some extent, you just hit a wall because in the end, any kind of security, be it copyright-wise or anything else like that, might be in the way or might need to be figured out. And in that moment, IT at this moment can say, we're not doing this. And that is because, from my experience, lots of higher ed institutions in Germany and sometimes elsewhere as well, think of IT kind of as like the executing branch, kind of like no disrespect, but kind of like the janitor of the university when it comes to the digital. Like you just do what you're told and you try not to cost as much. You have to be efficient and effective in what we want you to do, but you kind of deliver the bare minimum. At least in Germany, that's quite often the case. And I have high respect for the people still doing that job because you have to keep a lot of balls in the air, kind of. you have to juggle quite a bit. You have to outsource. You need to recruit people who can actually do the work while not being able to pay salaries that would be like industry standard. So there's lots of balls in the air. And then we come along and ask people to, hey, wouldn't it be a cool idea if like the first semester students got their own domain when they join our institution? And they will just throw their hands in the air and tell you to leave the room. And I can understand how they do that. And I think it's a strategic and organizational development challenge then. And it's not about IT anymore.
And this is something we've seen, I think, for over a decade, longer now, of IT from the academic mission. And at some points, they're actually working at cross purposes, given that idea of trying to keep everything controlled and some of the unknowns that come with IT and some of the larger kind of possibilities for, you know, what we see like systemic failure if an application doesn't work. So that push for an enterprise singular application often means they're more concerned about one thing being reliable and not about a whole different garden of, you know, various, you know, herbs and flowers and plants and vegetables that you're growing so that you have a rich kind of well-balanced diet, to use a bad metaphor. So it is, I mean, and it's an ongoing struggle. And on the other side, we in some ways Reclaim Hosting, not to use this as a little commercial, but don't ever put it past me, is one of the things that actually happens is we find ourselves in that weird space where there's IT organizations that can't or won't do it. And there's faculty and students and groups and organizations on campus that need to do it. And so it just fits a need. And IT doesn't mind because they don't want to be left holding the bag and they have other things to do. And yet we're kind of situated in that we understand the needs and kind of deal with these applications and these server infrastructures on a regular basis. So it's that kind of strange thing that I always thought I was going to be an instructional technologist at a university for life. But turns out universities are more interested in getting help from a third party, often corporate situation. And in some ways, it's easy, at least in America, to vilify the vendor and, you know, celebrate the university and what could be. And I understand that struggle, but at the same time, the universities are the one who are looking for those alternatives because, and that's the people who kind of are doing this because internally they're not getting support. Mm-hmm. And so there's a weird struggle there. And I wonder just how you are both working in some ways externally to try and rethink how folks can do it internally. I imagine that presents some real struggles. So what are some of the examples you use? Like when you go, how do you frame it? Like, how do you say, here's what's happening. Wouldn't you want to allow your students and faculty to do this?
I think we're still on the way of figuring this out. So we've looked at, for example, Coventry. And because they kind of have this great intro to what does domains mean on their website. And I think that's a good example because it kind of enables us to say, well, this was started at least while they were still within in the European Union, right? So any kind of the UK sector at least is perceived sometimes as a bit more comparable to what we have on continental Europe. So that's one thing. The e-portfolio was mentioned before. Like this can be a segue into this whole thing, and I think it's a classic. But also linking it to institutional strategies and not maybe even regional strategies like the Hamburg Open Online University does. So claiming that learning and teaching should kind of interact with society as a whole and making that more strategic, maybe even not as easily graspable argument. But those kinds of segues we've tried out. Also, and that's, I think, my last point to this is you can link domain of one's own to something that many people would say is kind of almost not an explicit goal of higher ed education quite often, but like anything that can be linked to digital literacies or digital or any kind of competence framework. Nobody ever asks a student after university, well, how are your Moodle skills? How are your, LMS skills? But if you come out of university and you can, I don't know, work with WordPress, you know, PHP, HTML, whatever it is, I wish I had been at a university running this stuff, because my life would be much easier now. And I think that goes for lots of other people in their job world, but also in like the private lives.
And one thing you can also start try to connect to when talking about domains is there are a couple of universities that try to do research-based learning. So Forschendes Lernen, that's a big thing in Germany. Has a sort of strong advocates in Germany, and so that's also where I come from the open access viewpoint. So trying to link student publishing to domains can also work. There are projects that try to have students publish also as part of their studies. So that's also something that some universities can relate to.
I have to say, this has been an amazing conversation. I want to thank you both for taking the time to not only promote the good word of Domain of One's Own far and wide in Germany, but also just thinking critically about what it means to do something like this in a different context, culturally, politically, etc. It's super interesting, and hopefully you'll find not only other people inspired by your work, but also inspired by others, so that the virtuous circle can keep on turning. So thank you both for joining us for another great session in Domains 21. Big fan.
Thank you.
Thanks for making this work. Looking forward to the other sessions.
Nom nom nom.